All right. 61 verse 1. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. And I just want to go to verse 7. Instead of their shame, my people will receive a double portion, and instead of disgrace, they will rejoice in their inheritance. And so they will inherit a double portion in their land, and everlasting joy will be theirs. And, sorry, can I just get some water? I think I had a bottle. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for bearing with me. Okay. And before I start, I wanted to make one point. In that passage, Isaiah 50, it says in verse 7, therefore have I set my face like flint, and I know I will not be put to shame. So this passage here is it's called a servant song, and it's talking about Christ. So this is the Old Testament referring to something that would come later, and that's Christ. And it says that his face, I know I will not be put to shame. And that kind of brings me to start the message. And so if you don't know, my message is about shame. And we'll get back to that passage. And that's going to be the key, how we overcome shame. But just to introduce the message, I want to just ask the question, what is shame? So what is shame? And if you can cue the slide. So I have some insights to offer just based on personal study. And the first point I want to make is that there's a distinction between shame and glory. Shame and glory. And I want to read these two passages. So it says in Psalm, you don't have to flip, I have it already ready. So it says in Psalm 4:2, how long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? How long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? So it seems like the Bible, how it describes shame, is there's a contrast between glory and shame. So there's some kind of contrast going on. They might be opposites, or they definitely work together, or work against each other, at least. So you have glory, and you have shame. And just the second point to back it up is... sorry, still the first point, just the second verse, Habakkuk 2:16. It says, you will be filled with shame instead of glory. So you will be filled with shame instead of glory. And the point I want to make here is that there is a contrast, shame and glory. And what the picture is in Genesis, when you have Adam and Eve, and it says that they were without shame, they felt no shame, is a picture of glory. And what glory is that they're reflecting God. So there was nothing blocking the relationship between God the Father and their children. So there was a connection, glory, right? If Adam and Eve are like the mirror, and then when they see God, and God sees them, they're reflecting back his glory. But what happens with shame is that there's sin, and that gives birth to shame. And then the shame covers the glory. It's like if you have a light bulb, and that's the glory. And then shame, what it does is it covers it. And so there's no longer that connection between God the Father and his children. So there's a disconnection. There's a broken relationship. So what happens then is when there's no connection between the children and the Father is that they don't know who they are. They lose their identity. And they start to look at themselves. They instead of getting their identity from God, they get their identity from themselves, because that connection is broken. So that's kind of just a simple idea. So glory is looking at God, reflecting God's love for you, reflecting God's forgiveness, what God says about you. And then shame is comes from sin. It covers us, and then no longer we're looking at God for who we are, we're looking at ourselves, or we're looking to other things. So that's just one idea, shame and glory. And then the second point, just to illustrate it more, is the distinction between shame and guilt. And it's a simple distinction. So shame has to do with one's being, and guilt has to do with one's behavior. So by that I mean, so for example, say you do something wrong, you make a mistake, you feel guilty. So guilt says, I made a mistake, or I failed. So, but then what happens is it goes further with shame, and instead of saying, I failed, with guilt, you're saying, I am a failure, or I am a loser, or I am stupid. So you start to internalize the mistake that you made, and then it starts to be associated with who you are, so your being. So guilt is what you've done, the things you've done, your behavior, and then what happens is you internalize that, and then it becomes shame, which is now not just that you've made a mistake, but now you're saying, I am a mistake, I am a failure. So that's just another idea to look at the distinction. And then the third point I want to mention. Are you controlling the slides? Okay, thanks. In his book, Russ Rainey, talking about shame, he gives this distinction, or this further explanation of what shame is. So he says that shame is comprised of two components. So you have exposure and evaluation. And the exposure aspect of shame is you're being exposed for who you are. So it comes back to your identity. You're just exposed. Everything that is personal to you, that's protected, that's private, is coming into the light. People are seeing you for who you really are. So you're exposed. And oftentimes that, with us, it has to do with our bodies. If people see our bodies, oftentimes we have shame, because that's who we are, right? That's something personal, private, protected. We don't want anybody to see that. And it's interesting in the garden that they were naked. And I see this as a picture of them being exposed. But before sin, they weren't necessarily shameful. So they were exposed, and yet they didn't have any shame. So just because you're exposed doesn't mean you'll feel shame. So the second component of shame that really activates it or gives it its power over us is this part, evaluation. And evaluation is basically caring what other people think. We're exposed first, and then we fear being evaluated by others. We fear being seen. We're in the light, and we're afraid. We're afraid what people are going to think, what people are going to say, how they're going to judge us. And so that's what gives it its power. And I think it has something to do with how we value ourselves. Because if we're comfortable with who we are, we can be exposed. I can stand before you guys and show you guys anything. But I'm afraid that you guys are gonna, I don't know what you're gonna think or how you're gonna value me. And then I feel personally that I'm limited. I feel like I'm flawed. So when I stand before you guys, I feel the way you judge me, I feel lesser. I feel like I'm not as valuable. So that kind of gives birth to shame. And just to give that theoretical concept a practical picture, I'll tell you a story. With my childhood, and I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard it, but it's the best picture I have for myself to understand shame and what it looks like. It's a perfect picture of shame. So when I was a kid, I was taking a shower, and then little did I know, my twin brother and my sister went into my room and went under my bed, and they hid there. They were going to scare me or something. And then I came out of the shower, came into my room, locked the door, and I didn't think anyone was there, so I took off my towel. I was completely in the nude, and you just do weird things as a kid. So I don't know, I can't remember what I was doing, but it was something embarrassing, like I was dancing or I was flexing in the mirror. And then I heard giggling under my bed, and I was so angry at first, and then I roared, and then they ran out laughing at me, and then I locked the door, and then I don't know what I did, I probably just cried. But I remember feeling so exposed and so evaluated that I was ashamed. I was ashamed of who I was. I'll get into it later. But that's the picture, right? So I was exposed. I was being myself. You're naked. That's who you are. You can't hide anything. And then you're dancing or you're flexing or doing something embarrassing. And that's, you're totally being exposed there too, right? So it's like the biggest picture of just that's who you are, right? And you don't want anyone to see that. And then for people to see that, it's like, wow. So that's like on Judgment Day when God looks at all your guys' lives and he sees what you've done in private. So very, very shameful, right? Shameful picture. And so that just helps you to kind of put that in perspective. And then, so I'll go to my first point. So after having introduced kind of shame, more of what shame's about, just some ideas, I have 3 points, 3 simple messages. The origin of shame I'll be talking about, so where it all came from, the beginning, and then the effects of shame, and then how to overcome shame. So simple message, take notes if you want. But and for each point, origin, effect, overcoming, I'll just be talking about the spiritual aspect of it, and then I'll give you kind of parallel to that, maybe a personal aspect. So I feel like with this message, I can relate to it a lot with shame. So I feel like instead of standing up here, kind of preaching, telling you guys about shame, I wanna share my life with you too. So I feel like there's probably power in that, and it's a lot of healing for me too. So the spiritual aspect for each point, and then also a personal aspect to see how it maybe applies to my life, and just so you guys can get to know me too. It's my first time preaching, so you can get to know me a little bit deeper. And this is how I overcome shame too. So the first point, origin of shame, if you can click. So the spiritual origin of shame, what it says in the Bible, if you're going to ask what the Bible says, it's this verse here. So Genesis 3:7, then the eyes of both of them, that's Adam and Eve, they were in the garden after they sinned. So then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. So with this verse, I just want to draw attention to 2 things. And the first thing is that the eyes of both of them were opened. And it's interesting, you guys will see, is that with shame, uses all these symbols and these images. Like you have your eyes, where are you looking? And it has to do with your face. Like either you're looking at God, or you're looking at yourself, or you're looking down. And so when it says that their eyes were opened, it kind of continues that theme. And the second point is that they realized they were naked. So prior to this moment, they didn't realize they were naked. So I think it's interesting because and they realized they were naked. So it's like, who told you that you were naked? God never told them. They realized themselves. And this is kind of the origin of shame. It's not what God is telling us about ourselves. It's what we're telling ourselves. So they defined their identity for themselves. They said, God made them perfect the way they were, naked, whatever fat they had or rolls or the way they looked, they were perfect. And then God's relationship with them was he just loved them the way they were. But then what happened is they basically said to God is that I'm not perfect. I'm flawed. Look at me. I have limitations. I'm naked. I'm ugly. I want to cover up what you made, your creation. I want to cover it up. God, it's not good enough. It's ugly. So instead of believing what God has to say about us, we're believing what we have to say about ourselves. So that's the origin of shame. It's not getting our identity from God, it's getting our identity from ourselves. And then if you go to the next slide, I just want to talk about, I think it's important to distinguish the false origin of shame from the true origin of shame. And I'll tell you what that means. So the false origin of shame, I was kind of already saying it, is who told you that you were naked? So after they sinned in the garden, God asked them three questions. And the first question was, where are you? I just want to put that aside. And the second question is this: who told you that you were naked? And I think implied in this question is, God is saying, I didn't tell you you were naked. I made you perfect. But who told you that you were naked? Who are you listening to? Who are you getting your evaluation from? It's not me, because I never said you were naked. Are you listening to the voices in your head? Satan, who wants to just discourage you and put you down? Are you listening to yourself? What you say about yourself? Are you listening to other voices, other people, your family, your friends? So who told you that you were naked? So that's the false origin. Oftentimes we listen to what other people have to say about us, or even ourselves. But we should be getting that from God. And then the true origin of shame, God, the third question God asks, have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? Because if you picture God walking into the garden, he has his creation, Adam and Eve, and then all of a sudden, they're different today. They're hiding behind some fig leaves. They're hiding behind the tree. And immediately God thinks, if you just play, just imagine. Immediately God thinks is, there's something different, right? Why are you hiding? And he knows the reason is because if there is shame, then there must be sin. Because if you've sinned, then that's what gives birth to shame. So he knows automatically, you must have eaten from the tree. You ate from the tree. So that's the true origin of shame. And that's the reality, right? We sin, we break God's law, and then we should feel shame. If you do something wrong, shame is kind of a healthy response. Healthy, or it's just the proper response. And so the verse to back it up, sorry, just if I could read it, just so I'm not making it up. So we are covered with shame, Lord, because we have sinned against you. So that just simple, we sin, and then that gives birth to shame. So the true origin of shame is sin. So simple. And then I want to move on and talk about kind of a personal parallel, right? Like I was saying. So that's the spiritual aspect of what the Bible says about shame. The origin of it has to do with sin. And then for me, how that applies to my life. So I want to start with this verse. The glory of children are their fathers. So the glory of children are their fathers. And the way I understand this verse, or the way it applies to me, is that when you're growing up as a kid, as a young man, as a boy, you look up to your dad, and you want to be like him. And when he does something, like he performs in a play, or he does something praiseworthy, you're proud of him. And I remember my dad, when he would try out for, he works at the TTC, and he would try out for the TTC Idol, so they would sing, and he would sing the song, and I remember going, and I'd be so proud of him, just to see him up there, whether he wins or loses. For me, he was a big shot, right? Like, I was proud of him, and he was my glory. And so what glory means here, I don't think it's like, you know, God, only God gets the glory, right? But in terms of, I think, how this passage applies is, it's just that we want to be like him. We want to be like our dad. So coming back to what I said at the beginning, shame and glory, is that what glory is in the beginning was just, it's tied to our identity, right? We get our identity from our dad. And I believe that the picture that God gives us on earth of our sons and our fathers is the picture that is a picture of what he is like to us, right? Between us and God and me and my earthly father. So I'll say for me growing up, and it's kind of a hard reality, but I was, my parents were divorced. So I never grew up with my dad. I never, in a sense, lived with my dad. So, and that's just the reality. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was just, I lived with my mom, so I didn't have my dad there as a role model all the time. I would see him on the weekends and stuff, but it affected me growing up. And so without having a role model there, who I need to reflect your glory. Like, that's where I get my identity from. When we look to our dad growing up, that's where we figure out who we are. And so without my dad there all the time for me, I didn't have anything to reflect. I was a blank. So I looked to the next person in line, which was, you can just go 2 points ahead. I looked to my older brother. You can go to an older brother. I looked to my older brother for my identity. I wanted to reflect his glory. But the thing with my older brother is that, well, I'll say first that I think when you're growing up as a kid, you're very fragile. You're very vulnerable. That's how you kind of express your identity. You need to have a safe place to express who you are. You need to feel safe. You need to feel secure. You need to feel like the person who is you're exposed to, the person who's evaluating you, loves you and is proud of you. And no matter what you do, will support you. And you're supposed to get that from your parents, right? That's the unconditional love you get from your parents. And then they develop who they are in a kind of a safe, protected place. But with me, growing up with my house, is that my older brother was very hostile. And my other siblings were very hostile. And I was hostile toward them. So it wasn't a safe place for me to express myself. When I would express myself, I would get hurt, or I would get ridiculed, or I would get mocked. I used to lie on the floor, just because I like to lie on the floor, and I would look up, and my older brother would come out of the shower, and he would step over me, and he'd say, "What are you? Are you gay? Are you trying to look up my towel?" And no, I wasn't doing that. I was innocent. But him saying that to me, I was just expressing who I was. But then him saying that to me, it made me feel like, well, maybe I am gay. Or, you know, you hear it so much, and then you start to believe it. So me just expressing who I was, I get ridiculed for it, and I don't feel, it's not a safe place to express myself. It's not a safe place to experiment with who I am. So what happens is I don't have anyone to reflect their glory. I don't have anyone to tell me, to make me feel safe, where I can be vulnerable, to express myself. So what I did is I would figure it out on my own. So And because I tried to figure it out on my own, I didn't really have a strong identity, because you're supposed to get that from, you know, your dad. And my dad wasn't always there. He was there on the weekends, but not always there, and so that affected me. And then my older brother, he wasn't the best role model either. So I just figured it out on my own. And you need someone to reflect your glory. And if you don't have that connection, then it's cut off. You're covered with shame. And you figure it out on your own. You look to yourself. You look to your feelings. You look to I don't know what you look to, but you just look to yourself, and you're not grounded. So you feel your identity is very shaky. It's very insecure, and it's very fragile. So that's the environment I grew up in. And you can go to the next one. So now I'll move back to the Bible, and the second point is that the effects of shame. So the effects of shame. And the verse to support it is, "I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid." So it connects to the origin of shame, which is their eyes being opened, that they realized they were naked. So no longer they got their identity from God. They got their identity from themselves. So their eyes were open. Now I'm naked. I'm flawed. And then because of that, they were afraid. So fear is the effect of shame. We're afraid. We're afraid of what people are going to think of us. We're afraid of being exposed. We're afraid of being evaluated. And that's kind of an internal, that's our thoughts in the inside. And then that leads to the behavior, which is we hide. So we're afraid, and then we hide. We hide who we are. We hide from relationships. And so that's the spiritual effect, is there's fear, and then there's hiding. Hiding from relationships, hiding from intimacy. And you could go to the next one. And then I just want to say there are three responses to shame. There's three possible ways in which we can respond to our shame. And you can go to the first one. So the first one is regret. And the passage to support it is, I cannot lift up my head. I cannot lift my head, for I am full of shame. And regret is just a cycling within ourselves. We're just focusing on ourselves, and we're stuck in ourselves. We're stuck in the mud, and we just regret it. We're so full of shame. We're so ashamed of what we've done, and we can't even lift up our head. I don't know if you guys have ever felt that, but there's times when I can't lift up my head. I feel so bad. I feel so worthless. I feel so so ugly. I just can't lift up my head. And I think that's the picture, the best picture of shame in the Bible is when your head is downcast. And you can't look up. For I'm full of shame. So that's regret. You just regret what you've done. You're so convicted by it. You're so condemned. And then the second response is refusal. We just refuse that we're ashamed. The verse is, you refuse to blush with shame. And before it says that you've sinned, but yet you refuse to blush with shame. You're shameless. And this kind of goes hand in hand with denial. We deny that we've done wrong, and we suppress it. We suppress the truth within us. I think we have a conscience that knows that we've done wrong. It tells us when we've done wrong. But what happens is we want to refuse it. We don't want to accept our guilt. We don't want to accept that we've done wrong, so we refuse it. We just suppress it. Suppress the truth, and we live with dead consciences. And it just, you bury it so deep inside, and you feel okay. That's your coping mechanism. That's how you cope, right, with your guilt that you don't want to face. So regret and refusal, these are kind of worldly responses to shame. And this is not God's intention for shame. This was never his intention to put shame on us. For us to respond this way. But his intention is the third point. He wants repentance. And the verse to support that is, cover their faces with shame, Lord, so that they will seek your name. And it's interesting, when I first seen this passage, I said, God, you cover our faces with shame? You're the one who covers our faces with shame? And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know what, that makes sense. Because when we sin, like I was saying at the beginning, when we do something wrong, we should feel shame. But God doesn't want us to stay in our shame. He doesn't want us to look at ourselves. He wants us, it's restorative. When we sin, God, yeah, he punishes us because it's wrong, but then he wants to restore us. His intention, even from the beginning in Genesis, was always to restore us. And I'll show you that later. Because he says, so that they will seek your name. So that they will move out of themselves and look to you, God. So God's intention with shame is that we would be convicted of our sin, what we did is wrong, but then he wants us to look to him, seek him. So move out of your shame. So he doesn't want you to stay in your shame forever. So let's see three possible responses. And go to the next one. And the next one. Okay, so just gonna stop there. So this is the personal effect for me with shame. And just to maybe wake you guys up, I'm going to read something in my journal that I wrote that I think says it better about the problem, how shame's affected me. And the first one is intimacy issues. Is that I'm very broken in this area with shame. Like you've seen in my past, my origin, is that I had to figure it out on my own. So it just affects my relationships. Like it says, they were afraid, so they hid. And what I did is I hid. I hid from people. I hid my emotions. I hid my feelings. I buried it. I suppressed it. So I'll just read a bit of this. And this is something God showed me 2 weeks ago about how with intimacy issues, I hate intimacy. There's times when I hate it. And it's something very broken inside of me, and just try to understand. So don't touch me, don't come near me, don't talk to me. Why are you crying? Why do you have to cry? I hate it when you cry. Stop crying. I hate this feeling inside me. Why do you have to go there? Why can't you just pretend like everyone else? I'd rather just pretend than be real. I hate being real. I hate opening up. You know what it really is? I hate intimacy. I'm not just afraid of it. I don't just run from it. I absolutely despise it. If intimacy was a person, I'd kill him. Then he'd never bother me again. Why does he keep bothering me? Just go away. Won't you just leave me alone? Why do I hate you so much? What have you ever done to me anyway? You've done so much. You've loved me when I shouldn't be loved. You've hugged me, kissed me, reached out to me when I wasn't asking for it, when I wasn't looking for it. You've touched me when I did not want to be touched. How dare you? How dare you touch me? How dare you love me? Did I ask for that? No. Did I give you permission? No. Did I say I needed that? Absolutely not. You violated my rights. You should die for that. That's why I hate you. How dare you love me? How dare you love me when I didn't ask to be loved? I don't need to be loved. Not by you. Not by anyone. I am okay. I am okay on my own. I don't need anyone. I've been alone all my life. When you weren't there, I managed just fine. When I was hurt, when I cried, I had no intimacy. No one was there to love me, for me to love. So forget you, intimacy. You weren't there for me. I won't be there for you. You don't know how much I hate you. I have such a deep hatred for you. I really wish you were dead. Like I said, I managed on my own for a long time without you. And you were never there for me. So why should I open up now? Why should I even trust you? And that just kind of shows my heart, opening wide my heart. And I'm really affected in this area with intimacy. And what I've come to understand about intimacy is there's two things to it. Being able to receive love from someone and being able to give love back to someone. And for me, what God showed me this week actually is, he showed me this 2 weeks ago, I hate intimacy. Okay, I'm thinking about that. That's really heavy. That's really deep. I don't know how to take that. And then what God shows me this week is, I hate intimacy because I've been hurt so much by it. Is in intimate relationships, I've been hurt. And I think that's the deepest place to be hurt, is when with your family or your spouse or your friends, is when you open yourself up, you're exposed, and you trust that person, and then they hurt you, right? Because you're so vulnerable. And then you're like a flower, right? You're just totally open, totally fragile, and then they stab it. And I think that's where a lot of people get hurt the most, is in intimacy. It's in intimacy. So that's what I've said. I hate intimacy because it's in intimacy that I've been hurt so much. So this is one of the effects of shame in my life, how it affects my intimate relationships. And then I'm not able to receive properly from people when they love me, and then I'm not able to give it back in a healthy way either. So the next point, expressing myself. And don't worry, there'll be a happy ending, so. Don't mean to depress everyone. And then expressing myself. So from my past, what I did is I just suppressed all my feelings, right? I was so hurt, I was young, I didn't know how to express it, I didn't know how to handle it, I didn't understand what was happening to me. I was just this kid that was just so hurt. And I would go to my room and cry and cry and cry so much. And so what I did is a coping mechanism, I just repressed it. Right? I just buried it deep, deep, deep down. And all the pain, all the hurt. And it's just sat there. Right? It's kind of like a dam. Right? I build this wall around my emotions so that I protect myself. I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to let anybody in anymore. I just, it's a dam, right? So there's the emotions are, you know, I can fake it, I can wear a mask, but deep down I don't want to be hurt anymore. I don't want to be hurt. So I have trouble expressing my emotions. I have trouble expressing. I can communicate, I can talk, I can say words, but when I express, it's my emotions, right? And I don't want to be raw like that before people because I've been hurt like that. So the last one, insecurity and confusion about my identity. And this one has to do with what I was saying earlier, with how you get your identity from your dad or your male role model. And because I didn't have that growing up so strongly, I didn't know who I was. You might hear people say, I don't know who I am. And some people might think that's strange, or they might not understand that themselves. But oftentimes I've said that, I don't know who I am, or I don't like myself. And it's rooted in that. There's an insecurity I have, and I don't even know who I am because I never got that. I never reflected my father's glory enough to be grounded for who I am. So these are just, this is just how I'm messed up in life. So the next point you can go to, and this was just a summary. So summary, if origin of shame is sin, and then sin gives birth to shame. And what that really is shame is looking at ourselves, kind of defining our own identity, valuing ourselves, instead of reflecting God's glory, which means receiving what God has to say about us. So shame is what we have to say about ourselves, and then what we have to say about ourselves is not good. Or we can receive what God has to say about us. We're loved, we're cherished. And then the effects of shame is that it affects there's fear, fear of being exposed for who you are, so you hide who you really are, and you it affects your intimacy with people, how and being your who you really are, your true self, showing your true self, you want to hide that. And then the next point, so overcoming shame. So here's the light at the end of the tunnel. So spiritual overcoming. So the points I'm gonna mention is the first point, we need to be clothed, right? Because you look at Adam and Eve and they were naked, right? So that's kind of a symbol or an image of our sin, right? We're exposed before God, we're naked, so we need clothes, right? But when you come to God, when you come to a party, you don't want to be naked, right? You want to have clothes on. And then the second point, we need to be clothed not just with anyone, not just with anything, we need to be clothed with Christ. And I'll tell you why. And then the third point is, how do you be clothed with Christ? You look to Christ. So we need to look to Christ to be clothed with Christ. And so let's unpack this. So the first point, we need to be clothed. So this first point here, I mentioned earlier how even in Genesis, God's intention for us was never to have us look at ourselves. His intention was always that we would seek his name. Like, cover our faces with shame so that we could seek you. So even in Genesis, there's a foreshadow of how God was going to restore us. How he was going to bring us back to himself. And how he was going to do that, he's going to clothe us. He was going to cover up our nakedness. And it says, the Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. So they, before this, they tried to clothe themselves. They put on the fig leaves. And that was kind of them doing their best. But then God is merciful to them, and he knows it's harsh weather, it's hard outside. So he makes the clothes for them. And it's a nice picture of God doing something nice for them. But it's a foreshadow of what's to come, that God will provide a means for us to be clothed. Right? How is he going to do that? He's going to give us some kind of clothes that will... We don't have to be naked anymore. We don't have to be ashamed. So there's a hope here, right? And all people don't know what it is yet, but that comes later. And that's, if you go to the next point. Oh, so this point it kind of backs it up too. I counsel you to buy from me white clothes to wear so you can cover your shameful nakedness. So after the fall, nakedness is now being associated with shame. Right? If before the fall there was no sin, so they were fine to be exposed. They were fine, but after the fall, now being naked is shameful, right? Because you're sinful, and so it says white clothes to wear. So there's gonna be clothes so you can cover your shameful nakedness. So what is this white clothes that we're gonna get to cover ourselves? What is this? Next point. Oh, another verse. Just to overload you guys with scripture. So, blessed is the one who stays awake and remains clothed. so as not to go naked and be shamefully exposed. So blessed is the one who stays awake and remains clothed, so as not to go naked and be shamefully exposed. Because everyone will be exposed one day, like I was exposed in my room, with my siblings. Everyone, one day, before God, you'll be exposed, and all of your sinful things you've done, all of the things that you're ashamed of, will come into the light, and you'll be shamefully exposed. Or, the verse says, you can have clothing to cover yourself, so that when you come before God, you're not ashamed. But what is that provision? What are those clothes? Are you going to have your fig leaves, or something else, something better? Are you going to do it for yourself, or are you going to receive what God has made for you? And you can go there. So we need to be clothed, not with fig leaves, not just with a t-shirt, but with Christ. And the verse here says it, that that's possible. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. So you've been clothed with Christ. And you might be thinking, okay, that makes sense. Okay, the Bible says that we're clothed with Christ, but why? Why does it have to be Christ? Why are we clothed with Christ? And the next verse explains it. For the joy set before him, Christ, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. So why do we have to be clothed with Christ? Why is Christ the one who takes away our shame? When we stand before God and we have Christ, we're no longer ashamed. It's because of the cross. The cross is why this works. He endured the cross, and what the cross represents is what he did is he scorned shame. So that phrase there, that is the power of the cross to take away our shame. So what he did is he took shame and he made a public spectacle of it. And he basically shamed shame, right? He fought shame with shame. And he fought fire with fire, and his fire was bigger, and he won on the cross. And so why do we have to be clothed with Christ? Is because at the cross, Christ took our nakedness. He was naked on the cross, totally exposed, totally ridiculed, mocked. But he was never ashamed. And there's the verse I mentioned earlier to back that up. Christ was never ashamed. It says that Christ became sin for us. He took our sin on himself, but he was never ashamed. He never had shame because he always had his eyes on God. He never looked at himself. And it says in Isaiah 57, this is about Christ. Therefore have I set my face like flint. So his face, he wasn't looking at himself. He wasn't looking down. He has set his face like flint. And I know I will not be put to shame. Christ never had shame because Christ never looked at himself. He only looked at God. He was evaluated like Adam took his eyes off God, looked at himself, shame. Christ always had his eyes on God, never had shame. So, at the cross, he took our nakedness. He took our shame on the cross. He bore it. And then he gives us himself. He gives us his righteousness. He gives us his glory. So now we have the glory of God. So when we come before God, we're not naked. We can reflect his glory again. We can have our identity in God again through Christ. That's the provision that God has made. That's the clothing that God has put on us. It's Christ. And if we don't have Christ, then we have our nakedness, or we have our fig leaves. And if you want to trust in that, you can see what happens, or you can have Christ. Okay, and then the next point. So how are you clothed with Christ? Number two again. So we need to look to Christ to be clothed with Christ. Very simple. All we have to do is look to Christ to be clothed with him. So the verse Hebrews 12:2, fixing our eyes on Jesus. That's it. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. So we're not looking at ourselves anymore. We're not figuring out who we are on our own. It's not our own identity. It's not our own value. It's looking at Christ. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. That's it. That's how you get saved. That's how you get the clothes. And then the next point is the cornerstone of it all. Those who look to him, if you get anything else from this message, this one verse, those who look to him are radiant, and their faces are never covered with shame. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces are never covered with shame. So it's very simple. Just look to him. Just look to him. And then the next point. So this is the personal part again. I'm just going to get a drink. And then the first point. So what I've found in my life, 22 years, all my wisdom, is that how I've overcome shame, or how I haven't overcome it yet, but I'm in the process. And you struggle with God. I think you just have to struggle with God. There's a verse that says, we pour out our hearts like water to the Lord. And I think when we struggle with God, that's the source of our healing, in large part. When we come to accept his love. And I was struggling with God when I wrote this, and I'll read the next part, because next part, God speaks to me. So I was saying, I hate intimacy. And then how I struggle with God is, I struggle, I'm so raw with my emotions. And then he answers, he says, but Ryan, was it me that hurt you? What did I ever do to hurt you? I've always tried to love you. Even in your pain, Ryan, I was there. Don't you remember? Remember what? You weren't there. Tell me where you were. Ryan, I was in your tears. I was in your sobbing. I was in your loneliness. I was in your fear. I was in your room with you. When you thought you were all alone, I was there beside you. I would never leave you. Ryan, believe me, I am with you now. And then I say, I want to believe that. I really do. This is a part of me. There's a part of me that yearns for you. I've suppressed it. Underneath all my hurt, all my pain, deep down, I want to trust you. I want to open up. My problem is I don't think I can anymore. I think I've forgotten how. I'm so broken, I can't do it. It's easier to just not try. It's easier to give up, to live defeated. It's not, Ryan. That's a lie. It's so much harder to hold everything in. You have built a dam that holds your emotions back. It is an impressive dam, Ryan. I have to commend you. It is of excellent architecture, a masterful design. You have succeeded in completely cutting yourself off from the outside world, from the world of intimacy. Ryan, the reason there are so many rooms in a house is not that those rooms be locked, but that they be open. I value your individuality. That's why I made you. That's how I made you. That's why I give you your own room. But I've also made you to be in relationships, real relationships with others too. That's why there are many rooms for many other people to join you. You weren't meant to lock yourself in your room and hide. You were meant to be open, to let people inside your room, special people in your life. I've put special people in your life. They want to come in, to truly come in. I'll just end it there. And so struggling with God, something like this, just bearing your feelings to God, just being totally honest and transparent and letting God's love speak to you, letting him speak to you. And don't be afraid to say anything to God. I hate intimacy. I hate you, God. Why weren't you there for me? Just let it out. And then let God speak to you. And then the next point, making amends. So there's a lot of things in our past where people have wronged us. And for me, like I was saying with my siblings, my older brother a lot. I've been figuring this stuff out for the past 4 years. All the stuff I've suppressed, all the feelings. And it's coming back up through my the third point, which is kind of connected, mentorship. So my mentorship with Michael. And how from the past 4 years, we've been dealing with all the stuff I've held inside. And so one of the things I realized is that I have a lot of hurt from my past, from my older brother. So what I did this week to prepare for the sermon, because Michael recommended I do it actually, that I go talk to my brother and just open up, just tell him how what he's done has hurt me over the years. So I met with him this week, and I've never done something like that before with my older brother. I've never really had any real intimacy. I've never opened up to him. I've never told him my feelings. I'd forgiven him. I had nothing against him. I totally let it go. But I just felt like it would restore our relationship. It would help him to understand me more. So I met with him, and I just told him how I felt. I told him how he's hurt me over the years. And I was surprised because I never noticed this about my brother, but he's a really good listener, and he really understands, and he really shows that he understands. And there was a lot of healing just for him to listen and to spend the time with me and to receive what I had to say and to apologize. And there was just a lot of healing in my emotions. So I'm coming along. I'm very broken, but there's healing. So I think that's very important to do. In my life and anyone's life, is to make amends. Do what you can to build, restore those relationships. You're no longer hiding or being cut off from people, but you're building bridges. So there's a lot of healing for me. And then mentorship. So the point I want to say here is that for the past 4 years, I've been dealing with emotions, damaged emotions in myself, my insecurity, confusion about my identity, the other things I said about myself that weren't good. But the thing that I'm moving into now with Michael is something very special and rare, I think. And it's come to the point now where he's become like my dad. And he's basically, the way I feel is that he's adopted me. And the way that he treats me is no differently than the way that he would treat his biological son. And it's taken 4 years to get to this point, but we're very close. And why that's important, and is because I was saying earlier, the glory of sons is their fathers. And for me, growing up with the divorce, I didn't have my dad always there, so I lacked something that I should have got, that everyone should get from their dad, just because of the divorce, the physical separation. So instead of getting my identity from him, I fended for myself. I survived on my own. But now what God is doing since becoming a Christian is that he's put people in my life, Michael, to give me what I lacked, to fill the emotional void, the emotional deficit. So I'm getting that from Michael. He's become like my dad. He's not like my dad. He has become my dad for all intents and purposes. Everything that he's done is what a dad would do. And so there's a lot of healing in that God restores those emotions. He restores the security that I can be vulnerable, being myself. I can be open. I have a safe, trusting environment. It's not hostile. It's not absent. It's there for me. So over the past years, you've seen me change and grow and heal, and probably the biggest thing has been my relationship with Michael. So I just want to thank you, Michael, and honor you. And keep going. So summary, origin of shame, next point, effects, overcoming. And if you can get anything from this message, it's very simple. But shame is looking at ourselves, finding our identity on our own, apart from God, and But we need to find our identity in Christ. So we need to not look at ourselves and look at God. Fix your eyes on Jesus. You can get anything, just look to Jesus. And your face will never be covered with shame. You won't be shamefully exposed. You'll be clothed with Christ. He'll give you himself because he died for you and he loves you. So that's the idea. And then conclusion, I just have one question to ask. Who will you reflect? Who will you reflect? And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory. We want to be like him. We reflect the Lord's glory. Are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory to be like him, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. And if this is like the perfect passage to summarize everything I've been saying, and with unveiled faces, we don't have to cover ourselves with shame, we don't have to look down, we can look at God, reflect his glory again. It's no longer disconnected. We're being transformed into his likeness. We become like him. We become like our dad again with ever-increasing glory. We become more and more and more like him. And the picture that I have with the divorce, that's why with the divorce, I never had my dad there to reflect his glory. I never had that to become like him. So I became like myself. But that's how God is with every one of us who has been disconnected from him. We need to be restored with our dad. We need to be restored and are able to reflect his glory again, to be like him. So that's my encouragement for you all, church. And I think that's it. Is there anything else? Okay, so thanks again for giving me the opportunity to preach. And I just wanted to end, too, with a song. If Colin can, I asked Colin to sing it. Oh, yeah, I have it somewhere. Sorry. One second. Right here. Thanks, Colin.
If you know the song, please join me too as well. And come out of sadness from wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted, let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, O sinner, come kneel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. Come out of sadness. Come out of sadness from wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted, let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, O sinner, come kneel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. Lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up have your face. Oh, wanderer, come home. You're not too far. Lay down your hurt, lay down your heart. Come as you are. There's hope for the hopeless. And all those who stray, come sit at the table, come taste the grace, a rest for the weary, rest that endures. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can cure. Come lay down your burden, lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. Come to the cross, all who are broken, all who are broken. Lift up your face. Oh, wanderer, come home. You're not too far. Oh, lay down your hurt, lay down your heart. Come as you are, come as you are, come as you are. There's joy in the morning, there's joy in the morning. Oh, sinner, be still. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can heal. So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up your face. Oh, wanderer, come home. Lay down your hurt, come lay down your heart, come as you are. Lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up your face. Wanderer, come home, you're not too far. Lay down your hurt, come lay down your heart, come as you are, come as you are, come as you are.